Welcome to MGO Podcast 11.2. I know we get to see skydivers, and that's kind of cool, but I don't need to see skydivers that much ever again. So, guys.
We warned y'all.
We did.
We did do that.
That's the silver lining. We can be like, told you.
We knew this was not going to be fun.
No.
We maybe didn't anticipate it to be this little fun.
Anyway, this is MGO Podcast 11.2 live from the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. I'm Brian Cook.
I'm Ace Sandbender.
And David Nasternak.
We're just going to do the thing that Seth did on the Friday one where he just says his own name weirdly and that that's it?
I think so.
Yeah, that's it.
Cool.
All right. So, don't schedule service academies.
Ever.
Ever. I mean, how many times do we have to do this? Until we lose? Probably until we lose.
Well, we've been really close a couple of times.
I mean, this was the one that may wake them up to not doing it again because, my goodness, that almost submarined a season.
Well, you know, you can lose to Army and then go do other things.
You can.
Like Oklahoma almost
It makes it more difficult.
It does.
Oklahoma almost did. But, like... There's a really big difference between almost and actually losing.
Yeah, that's very true.
But so this is the third time since 2012 we played a service academy.
Mm-hmm.
There was a 6-point win over Air Force.
That required Denard heroics.
Where they were driving for the win.
Yes. And they and they popped a guy open for like a deadly 80-yard touchdown and he fell over.
He fell down. Mm-hmm.
He caught the ball and he was like, oh, I guess I'm in the Air Force, so I don't need any of these legs. And then he was wrong. And then they win, I think, 29-13 a couple years ago as Air Force, a game that was not as sphincter-clenching as the other two, but felt pretty bad for most of that game, especially because there was a period in the second quarter where they were just lining up two tight ends next to each other and running off that direction, and Michigan was like 1-on-3 with their defensive ends. And then Air Force stopped doing that. Like they went into the halftime, and they're like, you know what, guys? That was working. So we're going to stop doing it. And I don't know why still to this day I was...
Can you tell that Brian's had some harrowing experiences UFRing Service Academy games?
Well, that one was the most bizarre because I was like, all right, well, what was the adjustment that Michigan made at halftime to stop this from working?
And it was Air Force's adjustment.
And it was like nothing. They did nothing. They just didn't have to address it. But before we get into a podcast that is probably going to be, oh, I don't know.
A whole lot of fun, guys.
Annoying. We'd like to talk about our sponsors. Our presenting sponsors are The Bow Store and Underground Printing, Homeshore Lending, Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Fuego Bucks, Ann Arbor Elder Law, and Perrin Brewing are our other sponsors. Please partake in all their products, especially the last one. Yesterday.
Yeah.
2 days ago by the time this comes out.
I haven't had a drink last this year and they were really they're really pushing me yesterday.
Yeah. I have.
And you did, I
and
assume.
I did. I waited a while and then I was like,
well, you're at the stadium, you know, so that that makes it difficult.
So Michigan's offense in this game was a disaster.
Confusing.
It'd be nice to see some reads that are really reads.
So Harbaugh said that either the reads weren't there for his quarterbacks or that they were called run plays. And I don't know how much I believe him. And, you know, it's the duty of a football coach to lie in press conferences when the situation
warrants. Yeah, I assume
warrants.
He's obfuscating for something.
Because the one called run that Michigan had for a quarterback all day was, you know, an off-tackle play for Shea Patterson in which he picks up 7 yards. And then after he goes to the ground, being hit by nobody, he just stays there.
It looked like the end of, like, a soccer run where a guy's just kind of tired after, like, going 80 yards down the field and, like, gets tackled and is just like, I've given up.
So I think that points to the situation that Michigan is dealing with, which is, I mean, we saw Patterson have some tape or something on his ribs after the opener, probably still having issues with that, and they didn't want him to run the ball. So there were a couple of opportunities where they were running the orbit reads with the triple option look or arc that were so wide open.
Screamingly.
Just moaning in the stands, keep the ball, everybody. And then you go back and you look at the tape, and a couple of them are actually like, okay, there's...
maybe there's a guy there.
They had an overhang linebacker sometimes. So if you're looking at the defensive end, you're like, oh, that's a keep. And then if you're not, if you're actually looking at the guy who you think you're supposed to be reading, it's not. But there were a number of instances when the keep read was absolutely clear and that were not made. And do you remember back before Rich Rodriguez existed, where shotgun was a passing offense?
Oh yeah, no, I remember
running out of
times.
The shotgun was a bad idea. So when you don't have a quarterback who's a threat to keep the ball, and Army figured this out pretty quickly, your ground game from the shotgun goes back to the 1980 days when it just sucks. So it went back to the 1980s. And I don't know if that's a failure of Michigan's tactics or a failure of certain people who are blocking, but I kind of feel it's more tactics. And the kind of thing that jumps out to me is like, so you have these issues and you have a version of Shea Patterson that's trying to get out of the pocket, can't find reads, and you don't really go to Dylan McCaffrey at all. He gets three plays.
Yeah.
And honestly, the first play he came in after the McCaffrey issue that I was talking about was an arc zone read with an obvious keep that he didn't keep. And I'm just like...
bit annoying.
I don't know, because I thought in the opener, Michigan had a ton of opportunities to keep, and I gave Patterson just an avalanche of run minuses.
And like partway through your grading, you're like, this must not actually be a read.
Right, so I'm already like halfway through I'm like, oh, they're just, maybe this isn't actually a read at all. And so all of those should migrate over to RPS. And they're all going to migrate over to RPS. And
that's going to be quite a number this
week. It's not going to be pretty.
So what does that mean, though? Because like, if they're trying to protect Patterson, that makes sense. But like, they can't run this the rest of the year.
Well, I mean, I think the thing that you're hoping is that you have a bye week and that you can get him healthy in that bye week and then resume doing the thing where he carries it.
So you're just trying to slurge through these games or two and then hopefully he feels better and then you can try to run an offense?
Yeah, I think that so what they did is they came into this with a game plan where it's like, okay, we're not really going to run this quarterback, so what can we do about it? And the answer was nothing.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like they kind of just wanted to out-hammer them, and then when you put the ball on the ground three times in the first half and lose them all, you really lose the margin for error there that they probably thought they were going to get.
Yeah, and two guys who really showed out last week kind of didn't do so well this time around, and that's Christian Turner, who was directly responsible for the second fumble, and Ryan Hayes, who came down quite a bit from his Mr. Worldwide third place showing.
Yes.
So he was spun through for a pressure right up the gut at Patterson when he just bombed it at Nico Collins and they got a pass interference penalty, which...
While
I'm on the subject.
Yeah.
Why is Shea Patterson's default when he's like, I don't have anything, not just like, all right, I'll throw it 7 feet in the air in the general direction of Nico Collins?
Because every time the camera cuts to Nico Collins downfield, you're like, man, he is so much bigger than the guy next to him.
And he gets open? Like every time
he's good at catching the football. Like we've established like all the things where you're like, this is an NFL receiver, man. Just punt it up to him.
And like how many times has Michigan just punted it up on a fade to him in his career?
Not a lot.
There were two instances in the red zone against Ohio State where he made the catch, scored touchdowns. I think there was,
I think at least one of those was like a real route and not just to like put it up there.
They ran a couple of red zone fades.
Okay.
But red zone fades are a bad idea. They suck. Unless you have Nico Collins. So it's just extremely frustrating that he gets through this game with a total of 3 targets plus the pass interference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like he had 4 targets or something in the previous game. And, you know, he's enormous. He's going to play in the NFL, and if you're not putting the ball at him 8 to 10 times a game. What are we doing here?
Do you think they don't...
Intentionally depressing his stats so he doesn't leave early.
Good luck with that.
Do you think they don't trust the pass pro?
Well, so part of it is the, you know, they drop back and Patterson thinks he can't find anybody and he tries to like scramble around.
Yeah.
And there were so many instances in this game where either he needed all day to get through progression and get to like Bell on a crossing route or Eubanks on the sideline, or he felt like his protection was breaking down long after he should have been able to find someone to throw the ball to. And a couple of the instances were obvious because you have guys running drags open directly in front of his face. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of just leaning towards the idea that Patterson this year is Patterson last year, and we're not going to get the like leap forward that Harbaugh quarterbacks have historically gotten, because he has the same problems this year that he had last year. So what if he didn't improve at all? Maybe he just doesn't have the speed of thought to be...
This is just who he is?
Yeah, like maybe he's just not able to read these defenses quickly enough to get the ball out. So there, I mean, the
the other hope is that you just throw these games out when you realize that maybe his rib injury was impacting him.
I mean,
that
is the hope. I like the rib injury, like, might explain why the second overtime he threw three inaccurate passes, but
especially that one to Collins.
They did mention one of the salient things that Joel Klatt said on the broadcast was that, like, when you do have an oblique, it was weird because he was a fullback, right? And he's like, he's breaking down quarterback mechanics.
No, he was a quarterback.
Was he a quarterback?
Yes. Okay. Joel Klatt was a quarterback.
Okay. Then this makes more sense. He was talking about how when you have like an oblique injury, the trouble is getting your elbow up above your shoulder. And when you don't do that, the ball tends to sail on you.
I totally buy that. The inaccuracy was part of the injury.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The run game stuff is...
The decision-making, yeah. I feel, yeah. is something that was a problem for a second straight week and is not because of his injury. Actually, on the first fumble, mm-hmm. you know, he gets pressure on a loop. He has a guy open. Like, he has a guy open on a drag route, and there are a lot of quarterbacks who get that out. And instead, he gets... I mean, he has a hot route, and he just doesn't use it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of feel like...
I'm hoping the injury has him thinking a little bit. I mean, obviously that's not good, but... Because we've seen him play a lot better than this.
Yeah, from time to time. And maybe different situations where it's not so much like a drop back, a number of... Like, the kind of things that Army does a lot are the kind of things that Northwestern does a lot. Like, they drop a lot of guys back into his zone. And he was pretty bad at that last year. You're hoping to see some progress this year. No, not really happening.
Not so far.
So, I mean, maybe he'll get healthy and he'll be able to be more accurate. The one thing that I do think changes his complexion in this game, if he is a little bit more accurate, is he hits Ronnie Bell on that wheel route, which was nice, by the way, because he really sold an out, and then he was open by 3 yards.
Yes.
Glances off his fingertips, and that's a touchdown.
Yep.
And then the touchdown to Collins he missed.
Yep.
Like, there were a lot of opportunities that you can chalk up to an oblique injury making Patterson inaccurate as the issue. So,
and it's not like he didn't make any throws. He did a few.
He made a number of, like, he seemed like every third throw was like, oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, the out to Collins was real nice from the far hash.
Yeah.
The progression to Eubanks, like you mentioned earlier. I mean, he threw that one nice. He hit Bell on a couple of crosses.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, so Charbonnet has 33 carries for 100 yards.
And that is like the maximum number of yards you could have gotten on those 33 carries for the most part.
Honestly, on my rewatch, I was impressed with a lot of them because he was able to regap when there was penetration. Yep. So he's a really big guy, but he has nimble feet, so he's able to get around guys in the backfield. And I think that, like, I'm ready to buy Zach Charbonnet as a star already.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Like, if he
also had some like absolutely thunderous blitz, but like some like you hear it on the broadcast camera blitz pickups.
Well, and then he got pretty much the rest of the game after the Van Sumeren fumble
because they didn't trust Turner and they didn't trust Van Sumeren, and Drew Wilson's hurt, so there's your running back.
Yeah. So there you go. That platoon got really whittled down to Charbonnet in game two of his freshman year
and gave him 33 carries.
Yeah, that was the most like bell cow type thing they've had since what, like Mike Hart?
Chris Perry,
I was going to say.
I'm sure Mike Hart had 33 carries at one point.
Yeah.
So that's the one silver lining from this game is that I feel like we got a lot of data on Zach Charbonnet, and it was all very good.
yeah, he's excellent.
And once they option some guys off and he doesn't have to fight through three guys to get 4 yards, then he'll be productive. So, yeah.
Do you think anything is better with Runyon at left tackle?
Yeah, I think Runyon would have performed better than Hayes in this game. I mean, there's certain things that they don't seem to be running off the left side of the line that much, and that's probably because Runyon is not there. And that, they were a left-handed running team last year, even with some extremely large people on the right side of the line. So
that's hope, I guess?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I wish they would go back to the short yardage package they had last year, where it was Ben Mason up the middle. Had a very army feel where it's like, I don't know what people are supposed to do to stop this.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, no read shotgun handoffs. I mean, there's a point at which, like, shotgun is pathological, and that's on 3rd and 3 and 4th and 2 when you're running on both downs. You know, like you watch Nebraska, and Nebraska goes under center when they're in short yardage. Like, there's a reason.
Well, especially if you're not going to run the quarterback.
Fox right. uploaded a like 3.5 hour long ISO coach cam video of Jim Harbaugh from this game. And I will be curious
what?
To make. Yeah, no, seriously. They uploaded the whole thing of just an ISO cam on Jim Harbaugh.
That's a blessing and a curse for someone who does gifts.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, I'll be curious to check that for those, like, 3rd and 4th down sequences where I'm guessing he's gritting his teeth so hard that, like, you can hear it in his headset.
Well, you just remember last year when everybody was irritated when the 3rd down call was anything except Mason dive. Like, I remember
justifiably
people on the stands shouting, "What are you doing?" when, like, anything else happened. And
was that you and I?
Well, maybe. So, like, it just seems like you have this opportunity to plow some dudes. You can do it with Charbonnet now. Like, he's that good.
Yeah. Mason and Charbonnet in the backfield sounds very nice.
But, like, and the thing about going into a goal line package is it's really hard for anyone on the edges to get to affect you, right?
Because there was, like, a goal line play where they had a free runner off the backside who just chases Charbonnet down before he's able to really get to the line of scrimmage. And it's like, well, that's how that play was always going to go.
Yeah, and that never happens when you're running a fullback dive.
Yeah.
And if you have the faith and Ruiz and Onwenu to move people out of the way, then...
Which you should, because that's like 700 pounds of beef.
Yeah.
So they also rotated receivers a decent amount, too, because Cornelius Johnson came in, and, you know, they did bring in Jackson for a couple plays as well.
Yeah, Jackson has, like, freshman slot disease, where he gets an end around.
Yeah.
And there's an obvious
cut
and he just extends it to the sideline. I don't know what Michigan is coaching on these things, but they screw it up so consistently that someone needs to point out that, like, hey, when someone has outside leverage and there's a blocker, you cut inside the blocker, period. Because, I mean, you extend it as far as you can to the blocker and then cut. But I just don't understand, like, how people can't see the fact that...
With freshmen, it's like... They're very used to just being able to outrun everybody around the corner because they played high school ball and they were just way faster than everybody.
But Bell did it. Vance Sumerin did it. What is Vance Sumerin?
I don't know how to explain that one. But Bell also had a moment in this one where he like spun backwards when he was about to get a first down that actually set up Michigan not converting a 4th down.
Yeah,
and like he just had to like dive upfield and instead tried to make something big out of it and lost some yards, and it was not great.
Yeah, that was an annoyance last year too, because Collins had that issue against Northwestern.
Mm-hmm. On that screen, yeah.
When you're a receiver, just get a field.
And that was another thing that kind of bothered me is you have Army guys playing 10 yards off, and you didn't try to throw smoke out there once. Like,
it was a very like, we know we're better than you, and we're just gonna run our stuff.
Lloyd
game, except they didn't look better than them for a lot of it.
Lloyd Carr was there. Maybe they let him call a game. Maybe they're like, hey, for old time's sake.
Oof.
So do things change with DPJ at all?
No. Is DPJ meaningfully better than Black and Collins? No.
I mean, like, in the rotation scheme, I mean, someone's
Is it about that or Ronnie Bell is my question.
I mean, Ronnie Bell looks pretty good. Also,
yeah, he led the team receiving by a lot in this game.
And targets on the year, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Peoples-Jones... Fine, he's going to be good. I'm glad that Michigan will have him out there instead of Cornelius Johnson. No, I mean, I think Cornelius Johnson's going to be good. Sure. Too, but, you know, he's probably at another level, especially since he's a junior. But unless you, I think Runyon makes a difference.
Yeah.
I think, and then I think you just need your quarterback to play a lot better. Like, yeah, most of this goes back to the quarterback. You know, the blitz pickup issues are a problem, I guess, if Charbonnet isn't in.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you keep Charbonnet in for pass protection.
But if you have like a Wilson Charbonnet rotation, yeah, then you can get Turner some carries in there too, which is kind of what I expected, although less Charbonnet and more Wilson, then that'll be fine. So your running back pickups are going to be fine as soon as you stop putting Hassan Haskins and Turner in those situations.
And Sumerin.
He didn't have a
blitz pickup problem. He just had a holding onto the football problem.
Yeah.
Which will, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if
which is a problem.
Yeah, if you're, I think we've seen his last carry of the year that's not short yardage. but yeah, it's just the quarterback has to play better. That's it. And if a quarterback plays better because he's healthier in 2 weeks, that's fine. But this quarterback performance loses the Wisconsin game by a lot.
That's right.
Yeah, hard to argue there.
Thoughts on that targeting call?
Oh my God, you can't call that.
That's what I thought.
Like, you have to give them some allowance for the fact that it's a changing situation.
Right. Yeah, dude got straight up submarined right before.
Right, and so you are running at a guy, and then all of a sudden he's in a completely different position than he was before, and you have absolutely no intent to target the guy. Like, if he had, like, lowered the crown of his helmet, fine, but that's a shoulder hit, right? Like,
yeah, that's one where, like, slow motion really does a disservice to the play and the defender there because, like, yeah, it looks bad, but at full speed, there is absolutely nothing to do in that situation.
No, you can't call that. Like, you have to give the defender some leeway for the fact that, and they're supposed to, like, in the rule book, like a runner who has started his run and is susceptible to being hit, and they're specifically more leeway for a defender in there. So I think that was a big miss. Like, that guy didn't deserve to get kicked out.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing he did.
Yeah.
15 yards.
15 yards that we needed. All right, let's take a break, come back, talk about defense.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves. This is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Well, I thought about the Army. Dad said, son, you must be high. And I thought, yeah, there's a first for everything. So I took my old man's advice, three sad semesters. It was only 15 grand. Spinning bed, I thought about the Army. I dropped out and joined a band instead. Got a job at Chick-fil-A. Exciting artist.
It's time for the hot take of the week. I'm Casey Kasem.
Brought to you by
Fuego Box.
It's important to get the sponsor.
Yeah, it is. Ace, what is your hot take of the week?
My hot take is that we are going to look back at the end of the season and realize that these first two games really meant nothing when it came to predicting how the rest of the season would play out.
Oh, that is a spicy take because everybody else is in the B-pone.
They are in the B-pone zone. I think between like the weird Patterson injury stuff and the fact that they're going to, you know, probably actually add some keeps into the offense at some point like they did last year, that this is going to look a whole lot different than the first two games.
All right, Dave.
Mine's very similar in that I'm not super worried. We played two very weird opponents that their offensive game plan are probably not a lot we're going to see. And on offense, we didn't have our starting left tackle. We didn't have maybe arguably our best wide receiver, and our quarterback is slightly injured. So if Patterson heals his ribs at all in a couple weeks, I think that things are still on track.
All right, you guys, those takes are lukewarm. My hot take, every time it's second and eight or longer, fade to Collins. Every time.
Every single
no
time.
No exceptions.
That seems like another freezing cold take.
Every time?
Yeah, I mean, every single time is a pretty hot take.
That's a hot take.
All right.
And if you like hot takes on your food, I'm sorry.
It was almost perfect. You just had to keep
plowing through it. We're keeping it. If you like hot takes on your food, get Fuego Box. You can use the code MGOBLOG10 to get 10 off any membership, and you will get 3 hot sauces every month, curated for you and the people who like
the hot sauce connoisseurs.
Yes. The people who know what's going down with hot sauce and hot takes. This could be the shortest defense segment ever. What happened? I don't care.
Just a pile of bodies over and over and over again.
That Slomka guy had like 29 carries. 29 carries for this A-back.
Yeah, for 92 yards. Slomka, by the way, long of 8, does not have a single lost yardage play on those 29 carries.
Well, and that's what just makes it extremely difficult. So Michigan comes out, they play the whole game in a 3-3-5, which is what they did against Air Force. And, you know, I think that is something that is supposed to limit the number of big plays you're going to give up because you have ability to get to the sideline. So they were kind of consciously trading this. And, I mean, I don't know. I haven't watched enough football of this variety to like be able to tell you if that was a good idea or a bad idea. Because it felt like a really bad idea in the first half because like when Michigan's stopping them, it's like, you know, they pick up a stupid personal foul penalty and they stop them. Or, you know, Army fumbles. So.
But you are putting it on like Army generally plays with very little margin of error, but you're even reducing that margin of error a little bit by just going like anything that sets you back and you're not going to recover from it.
Yeah.
First down was very determinative in terms of how Army drives played out.
Well, and Michigan's approach could have been different, and they could have had a couple defensive tackles and provided more like dive combating. But I don't know if that would have been a better outcome or not.
Well, and like, we don't know in terms of defensive tackles. Like, we didn't see Twumfor and Jeter really.
At all.
Jeter is a couple plays.
We were told that we would be seeing them. Ben Mason does not get much run in this game, and I'm glad he didn't.
Well, you know,
given the circumstances.
I don't know. In this game, like, Army plays the same game against everybody. It doesn't matter if you're 270 pounds or 300 pounds.
That's true. But I just, like, if there's a like, Michigan's linemen were not getting blown off the ball, and he's one guy who's susceptible to getting blown off the ball, and you can't have that.
Yeah, I mean, it varied. Like, I thought Kemp got shoved off the ball a lot, but he also was able to paw through some guys and get some things done.
Yeah, he was up and down.
Army did a thing to Hutchinson once where, so they had a guy block Hutchinson, and then the second offensive lineman just shoved the first one in the back. It was like the Bush push for off, and this was a fourth down, so they were clearly just like, all right, let's go do this. So, like, am I expecting Hutchinson to hold up against that? No.
No. That's very difficult. Physics demands certain things.
Yeah, so it's like, did Michigan play a good defensive game? I don't know. Should Michigan have done better? I don't know. Do I think that Michigan will get anything out of this? Absolutely not.
Should we have scheduled this game?
No.
Never.
But we did have a couple of things that stood out. One, Aiden Hutchinson put in the play of the game in the second overtime by getting a tackle for a loss.
Yes.
Against a team that does not give up tackles for a loss.
And the way he...
That was Michigan's first.
The way he did it is he stepped inside first with the intention of fooling the Army OL and then exploded outside and caught the quarterback for a three-yard
tackle.
Just
shot the gap.
That's tough. That's tough to do.
It's like a jab step.
To take an intentional false step and make that work.
And then to top it off, he beats two blockers to get up the middle. I mean, Quiddy Pay gets around the edge to get the initial pressure, but Hutchinson beats two guys to get up the middle, and he's the one who ends up knocking the ball out.
And Kemp also got there, too. So
yes, he did.
So the
which added some oomph to that hit.
And there were a couple other incidents where I thought Hutchinson did well. He got shoved off the ball by the tactics that I mentioned previously a few times. So I think there's going to be kind of an up and down for him. But he made the play of the game.
He was second on the team in solo tackles, which I think in this game says something.
And then Josh Uche got the whole game because Michigan was in a 3-3-5 the whole time.
Thought he held up pretty well.
Yeah, he got off a bunch of blocks, I thought.
He did get off a bunch of blocks. He made tackles at the line of scrimmage or near the line of scrimmage. He forced the quarterback back on a dangerous-looking option play. Mm-hmm. He held up at least as well as Hutchinson. Like, you know, this does not change any of our let's beat the drum for all-time Uche. So and this is a game where his pass rush was almost entirely not a factor, right? And he still was one of Michigan's better defenders. So, got to get him out there.
Yeah, very encouraging sign.
Got to get him out there. LeVert Hill caught the ball this time.
Huge pick. Yeah. probably a game saver, given the way game flow goes with Army.
I was deep in the black pit of negative expectations at that moment. And you have to remember that they were at the 1 yard line.
Oh, yeah.
And then they took a penalty.
Yep. And he was leaning in. Like they were inside the one leaning in and got pushed back. And that's when it all started.
That's about as close to total disaster as you can get. Yeah. But thank you, LeVert Hill, and everybody else who was involved in the lead up to that.
Because Ace, you were saying in prep that like that would have made it a 2-score game. And at that point...
Well, Michigan went to overtime with 14 points, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah. Let's not... Yeah.
That they would have needed more than that
to
go to overtime if they had scored a touchdown. So Ross was out the second half with some sort of injury. I haven't
seen an update on that.
I've rewatched this game. I have no opinions about Ross. I have no opinions about Jordan Anthony yet. Like, on the dives, their role was to like run up and try to prevent yards after contact, and then they were usually too far inside to do anything about the things that broke outside. So I don't know. Hudson, I thought
he had kind of a rough game.
Yeah.
He was, I think, the main culprit on the long run. I guess I don't have to specify.
No, you don't.
The run or the pass?
The long run.
Okay. I also thought he was the culprit on the long pass.
Yeah.
I'm more willing to forgive that because Army is going to get you a couple times when they pass.
Yeah.
I just feel like
when you do it literally like four times a game.
Right. That's like the cost of doing business, right?
Yeah.
So I'm willing to like let that one go. But yeah, he ended up losing leverage on the long run.
And the overtime offsides was just a, like, what in the hell are you doing type
literally
of play.
Staring down the ball.
And then the other thing is that they had the, I think it was a third and something, third and four, third and six or something, where they got the holding penalty. And it was thrown on Hill.
Oh yeah.
But Hudson was clutching much more than Hill was, to be
honest. Yes. Honestly, I missed the number announcement in the stadium. And I didn't know they had called it on Levert Hill until I did a rewatch.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, that was obvious holding on Kalik Hudson. In a situation where I felt like, yeah, they're going to get you when they pass. I thought that was it was definitely a situation where they were more likely to pass.
Yeah, you have to be more ready for it in that situation.
Did you not think that the one on Hill was legit? Because it looked like he had his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, it could have gone either.
Yeah, I mean, that... I felt like the Hudson one was much worse.
Yes. I agree.
Robbins Racing would have been in the UFR if it had just been the Hill one.
Yeah.
And they hadn't called it.
Well, the Hill one, I think gets let go a lot, and I kind of prefer it when it gets let go, especially when it's not germane to the play.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm out of stuff.
How about the touchdown that wasn't?
The touchdown that wasn't. What are you talking about?
Metellus?
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
I mean, yeah, that also could have changed a lot about this game.
That was 14-7.
In terms of the flow of things and how much I hated my life for much of the afternoon
also,
on Saturday.
Super intelligent by Metellus to pick his knee up before he picked the ball.
It was a great play.
And that's the frustrating part is, like, he made a really great play and the ref was like, nope.
And it's just like all you have to do is not whistle a dead.
Yeah. And
then go back to the review if you need to go back to the review.
Which has been a focus for refereeing the last couple of years is to like let this stuff go and we'll sort it out later.
I couldn't even hear the whistle, so it was like, yeah, just pretend it didn't happen.
Yeah, it didn't
affect the play.
No.
No one was catching him.
What a jabron.
Hit a convoy.
The side judge or whatever. The flange judge. He's a jabron. Yeah, so do you have more defense things? I don't have anything to say.
No, it was an option team game. Just
don't
schedule
these.
Throw everything out.
Don't schedule these ever.
God.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and this will be a fairly meaty game theory and special team section.
Recently, Seth and I were having lunch, and he asked me what someone in their 30s married with children should be doing with their finances. I rattled off some gibberish, and then he said, that's what your next ad should be. So, here we go. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. I'm a certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management.
And it would be smart for you to start paying close attention at this point. I think you would want to consider the following. Max out your 401k. I like the Roth 401k, as long as your income is under $415,000 per year. Max out your Roth IRA. Set up your mortgage on a 15-year amortization. Add $500 a month for each kid's 529. Invest with the appropriate risk tolerance. Make sure you have enough life insurance to cover debts, education, and income replacement. Don't take out any credit card debt. Pay all your bills each month. Make sure you have an emergency fund. And if your needs are any more complicated than that, connect with us at peakwm.com to book an appointment.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfums for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go.
It's over!
Underground Printing is proud to present The Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com. It's So, Michigan scores their only first half touchdown on a drive that is aided by a fake punt.
Great check.
Great check, and helps to have a former high school quarterback as your upback.
Yeah. Especially since he's listed as a linebacker, so teams are not going to be like, watch out for that dude.
Well, he is a linebacker.
Well, yeah, but it's like, it's when you're scouting, you're probably not checking through to see, like, is the linebacker who lines up as the punt protector yeah. able to throw the football?
The third string Viper.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, now it's on tape, so that's out there, but hey.
Sure, but if...
it's going to keep teams from going for the block.
Yeah, and I think that's something that... I don't know if they put that in just sort of generally, or if that was a specific thing that they saw Army do in the opener. I mean, given Michigan's special teams proficiency since Partridge took over, and we had that 1 year of the Baxter guy who went back to USC, like, they've yeah. been good, so I feel like that could be something that they put in specifically for Army.
And a nice move by Dax Hill.
Yeah, because...
He's a 5-star athlete.
Yeah, and the thing is, Michigan had like a delay or a false start.
They had a false start. They actually asked Harbaugh after the game whether that was intentional so they could put the fake punt on. And he was... First he talked about the punt check, and then he was like, no, the false start was not intentional.
Because
they already had the check on.
Right, and because the guy had an opportunity to tackle Hill short of the sticks that yes. would have been past the sticks if they hadn't taken the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So as that guy was running at Dax Hill, I was like, no!
I felt pretty good about Dax Hill in the open field against a dude from Army, but it was, made it a little more nerve-wracking than necessary.
And the false start was Devin Gill.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. The worst false start in this game was just Cesar Ruiz falling on his butt. That was a bad one.
Was that worse than everyone false starting except for him not snapping the ball and then him yelling at Mike Onwenu?
Well, yeah, it's he didn't snap the ball. Everybody else had a snap count, and then he's like yelling at his teammates like, no, that's not how that works. Anyway, so the fake punt, big positive, big negative. Ronnie Bell catching punts.
So I kind of feel him.
Kind of feel for him because this dude's first punt was 30 yards.
Yeah, I mean, like, and he's scattershot, so it's tough to predict like where you're going to have
and
to.
His, yeah, so he was like, he was a 30-yard punter last year. He had like 10 punts until they pulled the ripcord on him. And he had 44 yards in the opener. So, he can't get the first one. I understand that. He can't get the second one because he's like, okay, this is probably going to be a 30-yard punt. And it goes over his head. The third one, though, is like, yikes. You got to get that one.
Well, and then there's also like you fumbled a punt.
The one that he actually caught.
Oh, so, yeah. So that wasn't great.
So even the one he...
And gave me a dang heart attack.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even like a botched catch. That was a catch, start to run, and then fumble.
Yeah. So hopefully Peoples-Jones comes back for Wisconsin, and we don't have to talk about this anymore.
Yeah.
I do want to like take a victory lap on my talk about how Jabril Peppers was an amazing punt returner, even when he wasn't returning punts.
The greatest invisible yard saver of all time.
And if you look at this game, like, so this was a dead even game in turnovers. Michigan
field position was extremely important.
Yeah, Michigan had like 100 more total yards. So where did Army make that up and get to overtime?
Punt bounces.
And fourth downs.
Giles Jackson had an excellent kick return that came back because of the new blindside block rule. So
fair enough
on that.
Yeah.
I mean, you just
can't do it.
Yeah, and if you just run by with your arms up in the air, you, as Michigan did last year.
Yeah.
So, like, this has been in their repertoire. It was just a mistake.
Michael Barrett was probably excited to hit somebody.
Yeah.
Clearly was.
He had another nice kick return, too. It wasn't just that one. I think he got out to the 30 on another one.
He got out to the 30. He's an expert in, like, ooh. Oh, this is the 27. You mentioned this last week.
Okay.
You were.
Yeah.
You were upset.
It's fun.
And I can't fault the decision to go for it on either fourth and two. I actually liked the way Michigan played the end of regulation.
Yeah, because you're looking at it like, I mean, you have to play like almost the entire fourth quarter. Like when your drive ends, you might not get the ball back.
Right, and the running down the clock and getting it down to like 2 minutes actually turned out to be really important.
Yes.
Because Michigan had the opportunity to go for it on fourth and two, and the nature of Army's offense meant that the best they could get was a 50-yard field goal from a guy who had never attempted a field goal in a football game before.
So the problem the first one where they could have kicked a field goal and taken the lead, you think was just the play call?
Yeah, I'd like them to pick up the fourth down.
That would be nice. That's not, well, but not get drilled in the backfield.
I mean, that was a huge botch. I mean, there were multiple missed blocks on
that. That was bad.
It was catastrophic.
From a T formation?
But from a game theory perspective, the thought of going for it was fine.
Yeah.
And even the one at midfield where you're thinking, you know, Army hasn't driven the entire field yet. And
if you punt, you're going to overtime, right?
Yeah, but they were lucky to get to overtime.
Were they? I don't think they were lucky to overtime.
I mean, after they didn't get it.
Freshman Army kicker booting one from 50.
Yeah.
Well, what are the odds of that going in?
Yeah, I felt like going for it was the move. I also feel like getting it
was also the move.
Like if there's any
you got to separate the decision
point.
Making from the results.
But that was also then when Shea was out of the game and they had McCaffrey, and he also, I thought maybe
that might have been better in that situation. But the game played out
didn't
with Patterson.
Pull the ball though.
He didn't pull the ball on fourth down. On third down.
Okay.
On fourth down, they had a guy running directly at his face.
Yeah.
And so, like, that was a complete botch fest. Yeah. It was never going anywhere. Or was that the first one? That was the first one.
The first one was the blocking catastrophe.
Right.
No,
the second one was a guy running in his face. The first one was the T formation.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So the second one, they RPS'd us expecting an arc read, and they won because they had a guy blocked down. They blitzed off the corner. They got past the arc guy. So McCaffrey had to hand it off, and there was a guy unblocked right there. So that was an RPS plus for Army, as per usual in this game. All right, so Michigan tried a couple of field goals in this game. One successful from 43 in overtime. One unsuccessful from 55.
Quinn Ordain is your long kicker. I might have called that.
Okay. Was that hard to call?
No, not. You pushed back. You were like, I think Booty's kind of got the leg for it.
Well, I mean, it's a possibility.
Yeah.
I mean
after the way Ordain hit that one, who knows?
Yeah, that bent to the right from the right hash.
Yeah, it was not close.
It was long.
It was very long.
Well, that's never really been in doubt, though. And then Moody hit a nice one in overtime, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
And then we had an extra point that was very close.
Almost murdered me.
And I'll tell you what, did you watch any of that Florida State ULM game?
No.
Oh my God, go for two.
Because they were winning and tied the game in overtime, or almost tied the game in overtime, and kicked next point and missed it. And that's how they lost in Tallahassee.
Louisiana Monroe.
Pulled the 2001 Orange Bowl.
Yes. Yep. Except as a much more inferior opponent who should have been much more inclined to go for two.
Who was moving the ball on Florida State, especially in that second half?
Yeah, they went 25 yards in three plays on that overtime drive.
Was that on the ACC network?
It was.
Yeah.
This is why I should get YouTube TV, because I could watch that game.
Yeah. I'm getting sick of flipping through the channels where...
That's because you have one TV.
Well, no, but like I just... It's crazy to me that like on Saturdays I can't just pick the college football button and it only shows me college football games. Like I said, I have like a favorites list, but the favorites list is like it's got TBS on there because of the NCAA tournament and all that stuff, and I've got to scroll by TBS all the time.
See, I just change like YouTube TV lets you custom order your channels, so I just during football season take all the college football channels and shove them all up to the top. It's wonderful.
All right, well,
and I get the ACC network, so I could watch Louisiana Monroe bork a great chance and an upset by being too conservative.
Last thing to really mention was they brought out Nico Collins and Michael Sessa for the field goal block at the end, which
tall
I thought it was interesting to bring in the...
They put the Sessa on the field?
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know that. Collins, I get. Seth is hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, unless there's another number six.
There is.
Okay.
But there's not a number, another number six who's
on
like...
On stilts?
Yeah, who looks like...
Yeah, because the other number six is Cornelius Johnson. Yeah.
I don't think he's coming out to block.
Oh, commercials in this game, completely intolerable. We had multiple instances of the commercial, kickoff commercial thing. Michigan prepares a ton of stuff to like play on the scoreboard, right?
Yeah.
During commercials. They ran out at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Oh, God.
There was nothing left except like, here are your pictures that you tagged with Big House Live. So Michigan's playing freaking Army, and the number of commercial breaks so far outstrips Michigan's anticipation of the number of commercial breaks that the entire fourth quarter doesn't have any frippery. And I'm fine with not having any frippery, to be honest, but like...
It's just a bad sign.
Just unbelievable.
And the rest of us are stuck watching the boy band that doesn't dance.
Right. I refuse to purchase anything that's advertised on college
football. I'm still so mad at Brian McKenzie for that.
What?
For his punt, counterpunt contribution this week.
I didn't have a chance to read it.
Oh, there's a lot of that commercial.
So, yeah.
Which has already driven me completely nuts.
Honestly,
we're in week two.
I bought a Subaru largely because
they don't.
I had to like cut out every American car company because they're all on college football commercials, and I refuse. I'm done.
It's an admirable stand.
Is it?
I mean, you might go uninsured based on like
it's a stance. I'll give you that.
Commercials run, but man.
Yeah, man. Anyway, let's talk to JB.
We can do that.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
What's your ideal retirement age? Are you saving and investing enough to reach your goals? Are you on track to pay off your mortgage before retirement? How much income do you really need in retirement? I'm Nick Hopwood, Certified Financial Planner, Founder and President at
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. When clients walk out the door after a planning meeting, they know exactly what their needs are and where they stand relative to their goals. In my experience, most advisors don't do any planning at all. So my guess is now is the perfect time for a second opinion. And you can book your second opinion online at peakwm.com.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
When I first met you, I felt the flames of desire. Yeah. Let me hold it.
welcome in Jamie Mack of JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. I just got back from my Don't Ever Schedule Service Academy rally. So
yes.
Why were we not in attendance?
And passing a hat around.
Why were we not throwing it?
So this was not a good week for my feelings in the Big Ten. Not only the Michigan game, but I guess we'll start with the next opponent who got Rutgered. Central Michigan picks up a Rutger against Wisconsin by losing 61-0 and gaining 58 total yards. Wisconsin goes for 599. Jack Cohn throws for 11 yards, an attempt. Most alarmingly, Quintez Cephas is back in the game plan. He caught 6 balls for 130 yards. Also, Taylor caught 7 balls for 78 yards, continuing his, oh, now I can do this thing from last week.
Yeah, 37 first downs to Central Michigan's 3. That was actually kind of funny to see in the box score. Yesterday, Wisconsin had 21 plays of 10 or more yards in the first half alone, 16 of which came through the air, and they ended up with 21 plays of 10-plus yards through the air. And last year, they only averaged 7 a game in that regard. So, you know, was yesterday an example of a preseason game and they were just letting it all fly out to get Cohn some real experience, get Cephas his legs back? Or is this something for real? You know, we'll find out, obviously, in a couple weeks. Both Michigan and Wisconsin have a bye. And one thing that I think is kind of interesting is in the preseason, you know, those summer games of the year lines that various online and Vegas sports books put out, Michigan was a 6.5 point favorite. Are they even going to be favored in 2 weeks? Do you think that game's in Madison? It's an 11 a.m. local start, but the Badgers are used to that kind of stuff. I think Wisconsin's going to be favored when that line comes out next Monday.
Yeah, probably. All right, we have, I think, 3 more non-conference blowouts where someone gets goose egg that we're just going to get through quickly. Indiana 52, Eastern Illinois, Indiana University, it doesn't matter, 0. Yeah. It takes from this one, Jamie?
You know what? I'm glad Indiana had their fun because next week they have the Buckeyes.
Speaking of the Buckeyes, Ohio State 42, Cincinnati 0. Game that some people thought might be competitive because apparently beating UCLA counts for something now. Not so much.
Not really.
Justin Fields completes 80% of his passes for 9 yards an attempt. J.K. Dobbins goes for 141 on just 17 carries. Hooray.
Yeah, Cincinnati found out that a Chip Kelly protege with 5-star talent is way harder to play against than an actual Chip Kelly team with meh talent. So I guess if there's one, I mean, Ohio State's always scary to us Michigan fans. Their defense is now playing really well, 3.8 yards per play through 2 games. That's 19th in the country. Last year, they were 5.77 in that category, and they were knocking on the bottom third of the country. And they're flying to the ball. Through 2 games, they are going at defenders instead of trailing. Or I'm sorry, they're going at offensive players instead of trailing them like they seem to be all year. I guess firing almost all your coaches on that side of the ball is a good thing.
Our final non-conference goose egg of the week is Iowa 30, Rutgers 0. After throwing for 340 yards in their opener, Rutgers throws for 41 yards on 26 attempts. That's a cool 1.6 yards an attempt. Nate Stanley goes for 236, 8.4, and the rest of it's just Iowa-ing things along.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I guess the one thing worth mentioning is we've talked about Iowa needs some pass-catching threats for Nate Stanley to throw to. They didn't have much from the wide receiver spot last year, but Amir Smith-Marset, who's already established himself as one of the Big Ten's best kick returners, had a career-best day yesterday. 4 catches, 113 yards, 2 touchdowns. All 4 catches were really big. He had a long touchdown pass to open the scoring on the first drive, ended up being the game-winning points. And then later on in the half, Iowa was buried with bad field position, and he just ran an amazing route and picked up about another chunk play of about 30 yards, got them out of the shadow of their own end zone, and they ended up scoring on that drive. So that's something to maybe look out for.
Other non-competitive non-conference action, Michigan State 51, Western Michigan 17, Michigan State breaks a 10-12 game streak of not going over 30 points. They put up 580 yards.
Yeah.
What is going on?
I wonder if this means they'll wear those hideous uniforms every week.
Oh, that's a silver lining.
Yeah. Did any Michigan State fans actually watch this game, or were they still too busy trolling Michigan over Michigan's win?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know.
We logged off.
The Cummings kid played pretty well, though, so.
Yeah, so was Western Michigan supposed to be god-awful, or I don't know anything about the Broncos this year.
No, I mean, they have bowl potential, you know, which means they could have a winning record against the MAC. But, you know, every year when Western Michigan has a good team, you know, their bread and butter is on the offense, not on the defense. I don't think this is a really good MAC defense. And, you know, I think that you just have to hold off on saying, has Michigan State really improved from week one to week two until we see them next week against their first Power 5 opponent in Arizona State.
For what it's worth, Western.
And if they perform somewhere closer to this in that game, then maybe we can talk. You know, the good news for Michigan State is they don't need a whole lot of offensive production to win games. I mean, if they can consistently, you know, put up in the mid-20s, they're going to win a lot of ball games this year.
For what it's worth, Western was 88th in S&P Plus heading into the season. Right. Sorry, SP Plus.
So that's still, like, progress for Michigan
State. They have a pulse, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably the strangest game of the week, Penn State 45, Buffalo 13, in a game where Buffalo outgains Penn State by almost 100 yards. Deep into the third quarter, Penn State had 100 total yards of offense. They finish with 279 pass yards from Sean Clifford, 51 rushing yards, and, like, 20 or 30 yards on the ground, period.
Yeah.
So that's got to be kind of an all alarm situation.
Also, Buffalo is winning at halftime.
Yeah, they're winning at halftime, and then they throw a pick six.
Yeah, to start.
And then Penn State gets a big punt return, and it just kind of snowballs from there. That's how you lose by 32 while outgaining the opponent, is some weird stuff happens.
Penn State actually significantly won the yards per play, 7.8 to 4.5. Buffalo ran 90 plays, and they basically armied Penn State in the first half. They had a 19-play, 69-yard drive that took off 8.5 minutes that they only got 3 points on. And they ran their running back, Jared Patterson, on 10 of 12 plays at one point in that drive. They also had a couple drives in the first half that got close to 5 minutes in time of possession. They had a 90-yard drive to close the half out that put them in the lead. So Penn State just didn't have the ball much in the first half. But, you know, Buffalo didn't really come in with the same kind of reputation or offense that Army did. So, I mean, this is just really kind of concerning that their front seven really couldn't get Buffalo off the field in the first half.
Well, they were kind of supposed to be a defensive line of pass rushers who weren't that great against the run. So maybe kind of seeing the effects of that.
Well, that showed up. And really, they didn't get much of a pass rush when the game was in doubt. So, you know, that part of it that they were hoping to work didn't seem to work. But yeah, I mean, what a letdown, right? You're like, wow, 10-7, this could be interesting at halftime. But by like with 4 minutes to go in the third quarter, it was over.
Yeah, and not because Penn State had like done anything on offense.
No, not really. I mean, they, Clifford, their new quarterback, had a 55-yard run. And other than that, their rushing stats were 23 carries, 24 yards. I mean, that sounds like an old MGO t-shirt, doesn't it?
We never made a t-shirt of that.
No, we did not.
There was like
we never did?
There
okay.
was a Spittle-flecked blog post, but there was no t-shirt.
Okay. But, I mean, you know, Ricky Slade had a terrible night. He lost 2 fumbles. They just didn't get much of a push in the ground game. And, of course, it's what we've been saying for years. You know, Penn State is just continually still rebuilding that offensive line. They're consistently inconsistent, you know, over the years. And they just, you know, I mean, it just seems like, you know, losing Barkley and Sanders in back-to-back years, you know, it seems like maybe it's testing their depth at that position. I don't know.
Yep. Well, they'll have some questions to answer next week. Minnesota, 38. Fresno State, 35. Second straight week, Minnesota comes away with a thrilling victory over, Fresno State and South Dakota State. They actually do outgain Fresno State. They win despite having one more turnover. Their quarterback goes for 10 yards in attempt, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, 234 yards on just 23 attempts. And their defense just gets gashed.
So they threw a touchdown pass to tie the game on 4th and 15. with like under a minute to go, like Fresno State was in very, very good shape.
Right.
Yeah.
And they pulled it out of their little buttocks.
Yeah.
And if people stayed up to watch that game, they saw two great plays by Minnesota to win it. The touchdown catch that Dave referenced was by Chris Ottman-Bell, who I believe gained honorable mention in your draft-ageddon that's not a draft-ageddon. And his catch, I mean, he caught it with 1 foot down in the back corner of the end zone. Put your foot in the back corner of the end zone. There's no, you know, there's really no room for your foot to move there. I mean, he just landed in the exact spot he had to land to catch that ball or they lose. And then they're going to go into another overtime. They took the lead and they're about ready to go in another overtime. Fresno's got a touchdown pass on their first play on the overtime. Wide open. He beat the entire Gopher secondary except Antoine Winfield Jr. was there playing center field and he stepped right in front of it at the last second to seal the game. And he did that last year to Fresno State when they tried to win the game on a halfback option pass. Guy was wide open in the end zone and Winfield came in from nowhere to seal the deal. And you know, for a defense that has some nice individual parts but is overall maybe kind of undermanned, if they can get a full healthy season out of that kid, that could be something for them.
All right, Purdue 42, Vandy 24. Rondale Moore goes for 220 yards. Elijah Sindelar throws for 509 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 interception. And
yeah.
Vandy can't keep pace, but their quarterback does throw for 10 yards an attempt himself. God, these are such depressing stats given what Depp does. Everybody is going for 10 yards an attempt. And then right. So 35 attempts, 378 yards. Might be a barn burner for most of the Purdue games this year.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, through two-plus years, you know, pretty much every Purdue game under Jeff Brom has been super exciting. I mean, they are must-see TV. And even though they had at least an 11-point lead for the final 28 minutes of the game, you don't want to turn away from Purdue game because they blow so many leads. But they didn't blow the lead yesterday, and that was kind of nice to see. I think one thing was you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing this week in the wake of the Nevada loss that they didn't play anybody. They pretty much played the same four line, defensive linemen, same three linebackers. They got more guys into the mix in the first half. Rondell Moore was worn out last week after the first half and barely was a factor in the second half outside of a fumble and a punt. Yesterday, not much going on in the first half. He dominated the second half and rocked to 220 yards in receiving. And the two times yesterday that Vanderbilt scored a touchdown to get within 11 or 12, and you're like, well, here we go. Purdue's got to, you know, has to put them away. It was Sindelar to Rondell Moore on a big, big, big scoring play. One of 70 yards and another of like 30 or 35 yards to put the game away. And, you know, this sets up a really underrated game next week. They host TCU. So to watch Brown's offense go against Gary Patterson's defense, that's going to be fun to watch. You know, Sindelar through two games has been outstanding. He's the first boiler to start the season with back-to-back 300-yard games since Drew Brees in 2000. And he went for Sindelar went for 423 last week and 509 yesterday. He threw another really boneheaded interception, which was like, you know, Devin Gardner-esque trying to throw a screen pass. Remember that one he threw to a wide-open Ohio State guy in the Buckeye game in 2014? And he threw another terrible pick. So
why, Jamie?
You should be worried about that.
Why, Jamie?
Let's move on to the next thing.
Please.
Maryland 63, Syracuse 20. Syracuse was ranked going into this game, and people were feeling pretty good about it. And Maryland put up 650 yards on them.
They had 83 total plays. 21 of them went for 10 or more yards. They got 495 of their 650 yards on those plays. Those 21 plays, 23.5 yards per play. And, you know, if you're like set up at a sports bar or like in your man cave or something like that, and you're kind of doing a head swivel, every time you looked at the Maryland game, they were just shredding them, you know, either on the ground or on a big pass play. This game was never close. Maryland won the first quarter 21-7. They won the second quarter 21-6, and they never looked back. And, you know, over the last couple of years, we've liked the potential of some of Maryland's quarterbacks, but the problem was they were all young, raw, and regretfully kind of fragile.
Broken.
But Josh Jackson kind of gives them some credibility at that spot. 296 yards through the air last night, or yesterday afternoon. He threw 38 times. Last year, Maryland was 125th nationally in passing attempts per game at 20.1. So that's a Jackson and Loxley together has kind of given Maryland something we haven't seen, even though we've seen the big play potential of them the last couple of years. Now I think they've got another element. But I'm interested in seeing how they play next week and how they respond. They play Temple, which people are like, oh, Temple. But they always have a pretty solid group of five defense. And if you recall last year, Temple shut Maryland down. Maryland didn't get a first down on their first eight drives of the game last year against Temple. And routes, I think they lost 24-27-0. So, you know, I kind of want to see if they can sustain it. You know, can you come back after a big win? You know, but we'll see. But right now, I'm kind of thinking this could be a bowl team all of a sudden.
That really threw
I know,
me,
right?
That.
I mean,
all right, moving on. Illinois 31.
Let's just move past it.
UConn 23. You know, UConn had the worst power fight, the worst defense probably in the history of college football last year.
Yeah.
So it's hard to judge exactly how much this means, but it kind of feels like 355 yards for Illinois points more towards still Illinois than last week's 42-3 win over Akron. Brandon Peters goes for 225 yards, but on 33 attempts, that's under 7 yards an attempt. 4 touchdowns, 1 interception. I just like saying this because it's his last name. Zergatis yeah. is the UConn quarterback. Zergatis. I have nothing to say about him. I just wanted to say his last name.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, yeah, I don't think Illinois will be a bowl team despite their strong 2-0 start. So,
I mean, Peters has given them something that they have palpably lacked, which is a quarterback who can throw the ball more than 5 yards downfield.
Yeah.
Like, they'll have some credibility that they didn't have last year, but I just, they don't really have the depth of talent anywhere.
I mean, he's not the worst.
They had a Dave Brandon press conference legend, Dele Harding, out there making some big plays for him, too.
He got a critical interception.
He did.
I was like, you go, guy who we remember from things that happened during the Hoke era.
Yes.
That's like, you remember when Cincinnati had guys from like the Rodriguez era 17 years after Rodriguez had been fighting?
Yeah, like they had Adrian Whitty.
Adrian Whitty, and who was the linebacker?
Oh, Antonio Kennard.
Yeah. And I was just like, how is this person still alive, let alone in college?
Right.
Anyway, do we have anything to say about Illinois?
No.
No, they play Eastern Michigan next week. Eastern, I think, is on a winning streak against the Big Ten, so that could be worth it just for that.
Our final game of the week was the only actual good game. Colorado 34, Nebraska 31. Nebraska jumps out to a 17-point halftime lead and slowly loses it, in part because Colorado completes a 96-yard flea flicker.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Very entertaining game. Both teams are going up and down the field. Nebraska pulls into a late lead, and then Steven Montez, who you may remember turning into Joe Montana temporarily a couple years ago, still around, throws a dime down the sideline for the tying touchdown, and then Colorado gets a go-ahead field goal. And then did Nebraska have a shot to tie it late that missed, I believe?
In overtime, they missed a field goal.
Right. Yeah.
So Martinez, go ahead.
They had a 3rd and 8 in overtime, and Martinez took a sack. And they had to put their punter out there to try the field goal attempt because the regular punter, or because the regular kicker
is right.
Hurt.
Yeah, it was
and
a 48-yarder.
What's interesting is, yeah, so that obviously didn't work. Field goal went way wide, but Martinez downplayed this after the game, and you know maybe rightfully so. But the snap on that 3rd and 8 was pretty shaky. And if you remember, we talked about this last week. They have a brand new center who's taking his first college snaps at that position, and he airmailed the snap over Martinez's head last week. And then on the most critical offensive snap of the game, didn't really, you know, kind of got that play off to a bad start, and it took Martinez's eyes off the pass rush a little bit, and boom, he was a dead duck. But Martinez just had such an inconsistent game. He was 9 for 9 at halftime for 180 yards. He was 7 for 17 in the second half for 110 yards, 75 of which came on a quick pass and mostly run by Maurice Washington, and 6 sacks in the second half allowed. 6 sacks in the second half. Every drive in the second half, it seemed like, you know, especially as it was still 17-0 until late in the third quarter, just kept getting torpedoed by sacks. It just kind of felt like a step backwards for him.
Well, I mean, Colorado's a decent, like, I just feel Nebraska, they're not going to be the breakout Big Ten West.
This isn't UCF year two.
Right. But like, yeah. So, but you know, they're like, I don't think that you should be getting down on Frost yet. There's obviously a lot of building that has yet to be done.
Oh yeah. No, I'm definitely not down on Frost. I just think Martinez's play was just sort of inconsistent. I mean, he's playing in what is 13th career game as a true sophomore. So, I mean, you know, he's allowed to go backwards every now and then, but this is a game that should have closed out. This is a game that they should have closed out. And, you know, some of the same issues, you know, kept popping up, bad penalties, bad pass protection. Other than a couple big plays by Maurice Washington and J.D. Spielman, they really didn't have consistent offense.
I really enjoy them losing any time Maurice Washington goes off for a big game.
Yeah,
we'll see.
That's just karma.
That's you know, that's the Osborne way.
Sure yeah. is.
Well, I mean, you know, Maurice Washington playing right away so soon. That's one sign that Nebraska's back, right?
Yeah.
And then a second sign is when the Colorado fans rush the field. I mean, hey, when they're rushing the field against you, you're kind of back, I guess.
Yeah, I would rush the field too, just because that stadium was like half Nebraska fans. That
was yeah, sure was.
If not more.
It was a great game. Last year was a great game between these two teams. You know, there was a 15-year stretch from the late 80s to the early aughts where this was one of the, you know, highlighted games on the calendar. You know, we talked about Maryland and Texas should always play each other, you know, after Maryland beat them twice. But legitimately, Colorado and Nebraska should just always play each other. I mean, it was just such a fun game. You mentioned the atmosphere was great. And, I feel like I wish these teams would play more often. I guess they're playing again in 4 years. So, but
did you hear the Maryland?
Definitely fun to watch them go at it again. And they delivered another classic game.
Did you hear the Maryland fans chanting at the end of their game, "We want Texas"?
No, I did not. That's great.
All right, so that's 1 point, Maryland fans.
Yeah.
All right, Jamie, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Dave Nasternak. We forgot to mention that Elijah Sindelar at one point lined up behind left guard and nearly caused a catastrophe, but we're all working through early season issues.
Who's got it better than us?